Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
That you would be on a rather beautiful November 9th here in Los Angeles,
That's sunny, right. California.
This is why people move here. Hundreds of thousands of people move here every day.
I saw Christmas decorations out at the mall the other day, which means that time's coming, time to start shopping. Go,
yeah.
Go.
They were probably up last month.
That's right.
It's weird, isn't it? Every year it seems like it's a little bit sooner.
It does.
They can't wait, those people that want you to buy everything. But, you know, we'll all be there, right?
That's right.
We'll be at that mall doing that stuff. Are you in Los Angeles for Christmas, by the way?
I am this year.
Thanksgiving?
Yeah, in fact, I've got a run of Christmas Carol coming up, playing Bob Cratchit.
That's right, you do.
So it's going to be a holiday in L.A. again.
And you're doing that out at the Thousand Oaks Civic Arts Plaza.
Yep, with a great group
share
of people.
Forum.
That's right, that beautiful space
it's
out there.
It's a terrific production. I'm glad you're doing it again.
Thank you. I've done it for 11 years now. 11 years with that contract, which is the longest running contract I've ever had by a long time. So, and good people, and you know, Ed Hall, who's a friend of the show.
And you started as Tiny Tim, didn't you?
That's right. Although our Tiny Tims keep getting bigger and bigger. One of these days, I'm not going to be able to put one of them up on my shoulder. So, and when that day comes, it's time to retire as Bob Cratchit. So, but I think I'll be okay for one more year. So, well, now, as Michael said, we have a big show. In fact, I might even say a honka-honka big show for us today.
Oh, you didn't.
Yes, I did. Not only are we going to be talking Channeling the King, a great new show, which I'm really excited about, but Michael, finally, we get to get into Mark Ginsburg's Blue Jeans.
Really?
Yeah, I'm telling you, man. Go. Our audience is going to tune in for this one.
Yeah, especially the ladies.
That's right.
Well, obviously, it probably goes both ways.
We got a lot of fun things going on today. So who's with us today, Michael?
Andrew, you know, we have, as you said, two amazing performers here to talk with us about two amazing shows.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking, of course, about the stars of both the world premiere musical Levi, based on the life of Levi Strauss, and the Hudson Theater's Channeling the King. So let's welcome, ladies and gentlemen, in a warm reception from Mark Ginsburg and Rick Pasqualone.
Welcome, guys. Man,
wow.
That applause was for me being able to say your name correctly. That's what it was. No, thank you, guys.
One of the things I'm so excited about is these are both world premieres, right? Is that correct?
It is.
Unbelievable. Very rare that we get to do that.
Well,
so that's exciting.
And the world premiere that Mr. Ginsburg is starring in was written many years ago. It was just never produced.
I heard that. Yeah.
So it's exciting that it's finally coming to fruition.
They were waiting for Mark.
They were waiting for that. That's a good thought.
Obviously, we'll talk more to our guests in just a moment. But before we do that, Michael, we should thank our sponsors.
Yes, we should. We'd like to thank, ladies and gentlemen, our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. And to learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to State of the Arts.
Yes.
Obviously, great resources.
Yes, we encourage you, ladies and gentlemen, to visit Breakdown Services and Performing Arts Live to find out more about all that's happening in the Southland, especially during this very, very busy holiday season.
To be sure, Michael. And speaking of great things, Michael, anything interesting happened theatrical in your week?
In my week, let's see. No.
You didn't see any shows this week?
I did not see any theater this week.
Wow.
No, I've been concentrating on physical therapy.
Very important. How's that going?
Good. Fantastic, actually.
Good.
It's really cool. It's Southern California Orthopedic Institute. This is about a back problem I have, and it's great, actually. It's taken a lot of, in a very short amount of time, it's taken a lot of pain out of my body, so I'm all for this.
If this works out, maybe they'll sponsor the show.
Maybe.
New back sponsor. I tell you, we could probably get, so many people have back trouble, we could probably get a whole new group of people listening.
All of the people in my group of, you know, are on the days that I go, which is twice a week.
Yeah.
Are the numbers of young people are outweighing the numbers of older people.
They say our lifestyle is hard on our back, harder than it's ever been for any other generation, because people used to use their back and strengthen it, and now we don't at all, so our back
and
can't handle
it. That's one of the things I'm so excited about, because I am doing a lot of these exercises are for strengthening the core.
Nice.
And I've never had that opportunity to understand it or actually to, you know, put it into my body. So that's what's going on. A little sore today, as a matter of fact, because of that.
I can't imagine.
Anyhow, I want to ask you before we get to the boys here, are you cooking Thanksgiving? You're having it at your home in Malibu. He lives in Malibu, guys.
That's a shame.
Yeah, it
it's
is
a rough life.
I'm telling you.
Keep in mind, I'm in the slums of Malibu. It's like, I mean, it's the bad part of Malibu. There's no doubt about it. So,
yeah, Malibu
all
have
the
bad
all the Rolls Royces drive by very quickly just to get out of my part of the neighborhood.
Oh, so. Come on now. You have a you're on the south or north side?
I'm on the beach side.
You're on the beach side.
Yeah.
So how you, well, you never complain about it. It just must be a drive.
Luckiest move of my life to live in Malibu. Yeah, I got lucky with the way it worked out, and I was very fortunate. Great neighbors and great people, and it's been a real blessing. I've been there for 20 years now, believe
me.
Wow. Yeah.
So yeah, when you started playing Tiny Tim.
That's right. Back in the old days.
Boy, oh boy. And your beautiful wife, musical theater actress, and all-around wonderful mother.
Mm-hmm. And amazing cook, which is why we're doing Thanksgiving
okay,
at home.
Okay, so that I was going to ask you, is she doing the cooking?
She is. She's a remarkable cook. She's from Dallas, Texas. And they're actually born with a stick of butter in their hand. So Thanksgiving is always a miracle. So it's a really nice thing.
It helps them get out of the womb.
That's hey, look, you gotta make sure everything goes right. So it's so funny. She's an amazing cook, but not only that. I mean, the Thanksgiving family feel fits very well with what she loves to do and what we love to do as a family. So Thanksgiving, one of those meals. Sometimes we'll go out and do something on the day of Thanksgiving and come home and have our Thanksgiving dinner later. But we always try to do a full turkey. We always cook the full turkey. And I'm shocked in California how hot our place gets on Thanksgiving, because in the Midwest you're cooking in cold weather. You warm the house up with the oven. Here you're like, man, I got to go put on a swimsuit to cook my Thanksgiving dinner. So
what do you say? You cook the full turkey. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? Full Monty?
We don't just about the poor turkey. Yeah, we don't generally go and get like turkey cuttings. We always take the full turkey and dress it and all
don't,
that.
Don't
sort
most
of thing.
People?
A lot of people don't. In fact, we've got good friends who we used to do Thanksgiving with, and they order from Whole Foods. They order the pre-cooked turkey meals. It comes with pre-sliced turkey and no cleanup. It's a nice thing. Yeah. Do you guys do full turkeys?
What do you do?
Absolutely deep fried.
I love it. My kind of
you deep fried.
You were born to play Elvis, brother, man. No doubt about it.
It's in my DNA somehow.
That's great. That's
and Mark, you?
My family does, but my immediate family, we're vegan, so we don't partake of the turkey
you have
anymore.
Tofu turkey.
Yes.
Yeah, I've got friends who do that,
which
too.
Which they have at Whole Foods and other places, and it's really pretty tasty. So
really?
That's how we go.
Tofu turkey.
Yeah.
But I'm such a big fan of the sides, turkey sides. There's my grandmother's mother's noodles have been passed down for generations. We love those, but also sweet potato rings with pineapple and marshmallows on top, and just all so great.
What's
so
the first one you said before the sweet potato?
My grandmother made a noodle recipe when she came over from Germany. She had this noodle recipe that was passed down. It's like the only thing of value in our family. So it's been guarded like the crown jewels. So that's my favorite thing for Thanksgiving.
Wow.
Yeah, love it. Love it.
That's interesting.
When I was looking for a woman to marry, I was like, can you make noodles? Come on over. We'll test it out. We'll see.
And you know, I used to do it myself, but I'm so over it. I go to beautiful restaurants and have it
Where do you
done.
Go?
Depends. It could be the Bistro Garden. It could be Roy's. It could be any of those kinds of places. It's a treat for me to do it. You know, when we get a bunch of friends together and do that. Up to the Castaway sometimes.
Wow.
You know, the Castaway up in the hills.
Yeah, of course.
It's a great
place
for
holidays. Now, do the puppies get leftovers? Is that something that they get to enjoy?
I buy them organic food, so they will get organic turkey, and you know that has nothing in it, no salt and all that kind of stuff.
That's great. Yeah. Good. Keeping them healthy.
Absolutely.
I love to hear that. Well, we have a gentleman sitting to my right who I think deserves a proper introduction.
Sure. A gentleman? Is that the right word?
A gentleman and a scholar, a good playwright friend of mine would say. Our first guest on the show today has appeared as Shay in Cabrillo Music Theater's production of Evita, as Aaron in First Date with La Mirada Theater, for which he received a Best Actor in a Musical Ovation Award nomination, and Leo Bloom in The Producers with Norse Theater.
He was Lord Farquaad in Moonlight, the Amphitheater's production of Shrek the Musical, Lawrence Jameson in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels with the Glendale Center Theater, and Artie Green in Sunset Boulevard with Musical Theater West.
The audiences stood and cheered for his thoroughly introspective and utterly entertaining show at Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal. He appeared in Let's Misbehave with the International City Theater, Forbidden Broadway with the Cosmopolitan Cabaret, Fiddler on the Roof with Bucks County Playhouse, Kiss of the Spider-Woman at the Vortex, and The History of Comedy, abridged, at the former Falcon Theater, now the beautiful Gary Marshall Theater. Most recently, he appeared in Spamalot at the Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center and the Cerritos Center for the Performing Arts, as well, let me take a deep breath as I walk through this man's credits, as Joseph in the amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat with five-star theatricals.
He is a Philadelphia native and a New York transplant, whose other favorite roles include Quixote Cervantes in Man of La Mancha, Billy Bigelow in Carousel, Foreman.
L'Aigle.
Thank you.
It's French.
Oh, well, I see. I was not on my French game
right,
today.
Yeah.
You know. In Les Miserables, and Fagin in Cameron Mackintosh's first national tour of Oliver, a great show. He's with us today, however, to talk about his title starring role in the world premiere musical Levi, a classic fit new musical based on the life of Levi Strauss with a book by legendary cult film writer-director Larry Cohen and Janelle Webb Cohen, and music and lyrics written by Disney's most celebrated Oscar-winning composers, Richard M. Sherman and Robert B. Sherman. Please give a very warm welcome to a good friend of State of the Arts, the very, very talented Mark Ginsberg.
Mark, you've been on the show so many times that I think your intro is now longer than the interview can be.
We're gonna have to snip that the next time.
And I've been absolutely blessed to see so many of these productions that you've been in, and we didn't even cover everything in there.
No.
But do you ever stop working, man? You have a show every time I see you.
I love to work.
There's
no reason to stop.
This is a lie, ladies and gentlemen. He's got a child under the age of five, which means he's saving for college and taking every job he can possibly get right now.
Also the truth. I wasn't going to lead with that, but now
that
you mentioned
totally
it, I can't quite deny it.
I got to say, it's so fun, and obviously you've made such a name for yourself in Los Angeles. You have legit fans everywhere you go. I always see people excited to see you after the show. But what a diverse group of shows you've done recently, including this one, Levi, a world premiere musical. How'd you get involved with it?
With Levi, it just kind of fell into my lap. I have been lucky enough to work at Sterling's, upstairs at the Federal, with Bruce Kimmel, with his Kritzerland productions, fantastic.
Yeah.
That started last year. I did a few of those. I did another production with Bruce, and he got in touch with me one day and said, I have this new Sherman Brothers musical that was written in the early 80s, that was optioned a few times, never produced. They did a few readings of it. They said, would you be interested in doing a reading of it again? We're going to put it up. I said, sure, absolutely. Went in, did the reading, and he said, do you want to play the part when we do it in November or December? I said, sure, why not? I mean, how many times do you get to do an original Sherman Brothers?
Yeah, you
musical?
Say yes as soon
and
as you hear Sherman Brothers.
None. That doesn't happen anymore. So,
wow.
Yeah, that it just really fell into my lap, thanks to Bruce Kimmel trusting in me to do it.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's great. Well, what a great thing to do. And obviously, we're huge Richard Sherman fans here. We've seen him perform recently, and we've always loved his work. I know, Michael, he's somebody who you know fairly well, yeah?
Yes, indeed. He's a lovely man, he and his wife, Elizabeth. And they come into the club frequently to see shows, Mr. Kimmel's shows, as Mark said, which are Kritzerland Entertainment spectaculars with a wonderful Broadway-caliber cast doing a thematic show like we just did the music of Julie Stein.
Correct.
So
yeah.
This past Sunday, which was awesome.
Yeah.
Bruce is a very, very talented man in his own right and a successful author of books and music, and produces albums and remasters albums that have already been done and puts his spin on things. He's kind of an all-around guy. I don't know when he sleeps, though.
He doesn't. That's the answer.
He's one of those guys.
Sleep. It's true.
But he, what he puts on that stage, every production I've seen of his is pretty beautiful.
Yeah. And a huge, obviously, a huge champion of the arts and a very passionate
very much so.
Person of the
and
arts.
You've,
so
you've got a wonderful creative team, including the lovely Kay Cole, who originated the role of Maggie in a chorus line on Broadway, and she is the choreographer.
True story. I adore Kay, and she's fabulous. We have such a fabulous time. And, of course, Richard Allen.
Richard Allen, my favorite musical director.
He's fantastic. We laugh and we work, and that's the best part, is that we really are enjoying what we're doing together because it's such a great group of people.
Well, and you're doing it also at a place where Bruce is offering, it's something he does because he is an alumni of this particular college, Los Angeles City mm-hmm. College, and their theater academy. And when he was a young man acting and going to school there, and he certainly had his great success on television, you know, the Happy Days and Laverne and Shirley's and all of those kinds of shows. Wonderful actor that he was, and a motion picture writer and actor. Mm-hmm. And he, every year, goes back to his alma mater. That's and right. He puts up a musical, and he incorporates professional performers and intermingles some of the choice theater students who are there in the academy. They all have to audition for it,
yes.
But it's a great way of giving back, I think. And so it's important to him, I know that. And the college loves what he brings in, and it's always very successful for them. So
a great thing for so many people to get exposure to that in that
yeah.
atmosphere as well.
And
so.
It's great for the kids to get the feel of a real professional production. I'm
That's
not
right.
saying that their student productions are anything less than, but to be able to work with Bruce and with Kay Cole
yeah.
and with these seasoned vets and really know what goes into putting up a show like this is invaluable to young performers, I think.
No doubt about it. What was the audition like? Did you have to walk in and just turn around and see how you looked in blue jeans? George Michael got the cast.
I was very fortunate to be given the role, so clearly my prowess in blue jeans was already known.
It was known around the theater community. So this must have been interesting.
He's not modest at all.
Not at all.
No. All I wear is jeans, so somebody
that is
had
true.
To have noticed.
That's
guess.
Right. In fact, you are perfect for this role.
Yeah.
Did you know anything about Levi Strauss before this?
Very little, to tell you the truth.
An interesting man.
Very, very yeah. interesting. I knew the basics, as everybody does. You know, immigrant came over and
I don't
made
know.
A big
I don't. I'm not so sure that everybody does. So
well, just
really
just the basics
that.
Of
American
that,
success story.
American
yeah.
success story.
Yeah, yeah.
An immigrant that came over and made it big in the jeans company. That's pretty much the basics that I knew. But long story short, he was born in Germany in Bavaria. Came over, worked with his family, with brothers and sisters. He had three of each. Worked with them over here. Then the gold rush hit. And they sent him over to California to represent their family. They were in New York at the time, so he worked in California as kind of a liaison with their New York
sure.
franchise. And while he was out there, he discovered a way to make impenetrable blue jeans that wouldn't tear, wouldn't rip, and made that a huge deal, obviously. And on top of that, what people don't know is that he was such an interesting guy, a huge philanthropist. He gave back to multiple orphan asylums, tons and tons of money. He created 27 or 28 scholarships for Cal Berkeley that are still in
wow.
use today.
That's great.
So
That's right.
really, really a fascinating guy.
That's amazing.
And he worked and lived in San Francisco when he
yes.
when they migrated to America. They mm-hmm. went to New York first and then came out west during the gold rush, which of course everybody was doing to make their fortunes. And indeed he did. And I think it was one of his clients who actually came up with part of the idea of how the material itself would be solid
That's
and
right.
void of being easily destroyed in any sort of way.
That's right. The gentleman's name, I don't remember off the top of my head. I'm sure you have it somewhere.
No,
but but no, he discovered after being a client, yes, that if he put copper rivets in the high stress
yes.
places of the pants, that it would make them virtually impossible to tear or wear out. And he came to Levi Strauss and said, I want to do this, but I need a partner. Since this is your baby, do you want to be my partner? And clearly they did, and it became a juggernaut and still is to this day.
Wow. Do you know the interesting part? When he died, when Mr. Strauss died, at 73, that was in 1902, that gentleman that was his partner gave his shares back. He sold his shares back
to
the family.
I did not know that.
But it was, you said something earlier when describing the genes about from ripping and so forth. Do you think Mr. Strauss would be turning over in his grave to see that now ripped jeans are the fashion?
I don't think once you see those kind of paychecks come rolling in, you're that upset on anybody taking your idea and improving on it.
You're right, because listen to this. Levi's have been worn by people from all walks of life, from miners to Nobel Prize recipients, including Albert Einstein himself, whose famous leather jacket, which was made by the Levi Strauss Company in the 1930s, sold at Christie's auction house for $128,264.
That's what I've always told my kids about being smart. You know, it's all in the genes.
And
be here all week, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
My goodness. And the business itself operates in 110 countries. And in 2016, the Levi Strauss Company reported revenues of $4.6 billion.
That's billion with a B.
Yeah,
my goodness.
So they're still going strong.
I guess so. And the heirs are living, the ones that are coming into this fortune.
Well, it is interesting because, I mean, it really was a purposeful invention that became a fashion invention afterwards. So, I mean, it was there for a reason. These guys would come down from the mountains once every 6 months. They needed something that would last forever.
That's right.
And then it very quickly became trendy. But isn't that interesting how that happens? Because they were a purposeful invention, no doubt about
it. That's very true. Yeah, again, such a generous guy. Mm-hmm. Every penny that he made was left to he never had any kids, unfortunately, but he left them all to nieces and nephews. And
unbelievable,
yeah. Not of obviously his brothers and sisters. They had a bunch of them, 6-7 kids total in their family. Then all the nieces and nephews got a piece of it, so it was really fantastic.
So, the story is infused with, you know, drama and comedy and romance, and it is a musical. Give us a little insight into what the music is. I mean, is it fitting specifically to the storyline, or is it something that is a little bit of that? And you know, the Sherman Brothers have a very kind of interesting stamp on their work and their music. It's always very, very melodic.
It is.
With beautiful lyrics, and I hope that that's what people will come to see.
It is, and it's. I wouldn't say that it is one of those shows that has a different genre, a different feel for each number or for each scene. It's very... The Sherman Brothers stuck to what they know best, and right. I mean that in the best possible way, because clearly they were brilliant, brilliant musicians and composers and lyricists. So it's lovely music, a lot of upbeat stuff, a lot of fun stuff, some really tender moments. But when you listen to it, you really say it's a Sherman Brothers musical, and you leave with that good feeling inside of you that they never, ever fail to give you. So it's really fantastic.
Fantastic.
Well, you know, the optimism and the success part of it, I think, and being an immigrant, and certainly they left Germany because they were being discriminated against for being Jewish.
Yeah.
And they were also even having to pay extra taxes for being Jewish. It was very bizarre.
There were quotas on marriages, the whole nine yards. Weren't able to own property. It was awful. And the really neat part is there are so many stories out there of immigrants coming over, and they're looking for the pot of gold and success and to be millionaires. And of course, you know, that's what Levi Strauss was looking at too. But I love the spin that that the Sherman Brothers and Bruce and Larry Cohen put on it, is that it's not just about the success and the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. The mantra of the show and the key word of the show, which they write a song and many reprises about, is opportunity. Mm. And how important it is just to have the opportunity to make of your life what you wish it to be.
That's right.
Which is so, to me, is much more interesting than coming over saying, I want to be rich.
Yeah.
As
mm-hmm.
opposed to coming over and saying, I just want the chance to be rich.
Yeah,
the
right.
chance to make of my life what I want it to be.
Give me an open door. That's really cool.
It's such a fantastic message.
Cool. Well, this is a man who I've worn the jeans many, many years, but I'd never really looked into his life. And when I was doing a little bit of research last night.
Well, we all have
a mind, amazing
actually,
to find out.
Right?
Yeah, you're right. I've got corduroys on, but it is interesting to watch. I should have worn them today. I don't know why I didn't. I think it's probably because in Los Angeles, I find myself wearing jeans less and less these days because it could be 95 degrees anywhere I go.
It's true.
At this time, so I'm always shocked. But, I mean, it's funny because my first pair of jeans was a Levi's, and I'd never thought about the man behind it. And when you sit down and you really study his life, it is amazing, and a story of a philanthropist as well as an American success story like none other.
Yes,
so
indeed.
Very cool.
We should tell everybody how to see this show.
We definitely should. Let's do it.
Yes, at Los Angeles City College, ladies and gentlemen, at the beautiful Camino Theater. And the college is located at 855 North Vermont Avenue, right in the heart of Hollywood. And advanced ticket sales are nominally priced, and I mean nominally priced, at $15 and $10, and may be purchased by visiting Vendini Tickets online. And that is V-E-N-D-I-N-I.
That's right.
And you can also, of course, call the box office, which is 323-953-4999, extension 2990. Lots of numbers there to remember. But or just visit thetheateracademy.lacitycollege.edu. And or their general website. You'll find
That's
it,
right.
But get into the theater part of that website, and it'll immediately come up and offer you the opportunity to purchase tickets through the L.A. City College website and or Vendini.
And, of course, as we talked about, it opens November 16th and runs through December 2nd, so you got the Thanksgiving break. Come out. Go out and see some theater. Is this kid appropriate? Is it a family-friendly show?
Absolutely,
cool.
100%.
So it brings some kids there and introduce them to live theaters. We so often say on this show, get the kids out of the house and go show them what the arts are all about and all the great things that are going on.
And we have kids in the show of all ages. We have young children in the show.
Are my kids in the show?
Not that I know of.
Thank goodness.
But keep me posted.
I never know what they're doing anymore. That's fantastic.
Yeah, young children and a lot of fabulous, fabulous college students who are
cool.
Working so hard and doing such a great job. So they deserve an audience and deserve to know what that feels like. So.
And under great tutelage, obviously, to get to work on a Sherman Brothers project in college is a rarefied opportunity.
Do remember, folks, that it's a limited run. So the performances are actually November 16th. It's a preview performance. November 17th, the official press opening. November 18th and the 29th and December 1st, and all of those that I've just recited are at 8 p.m. November 18th and 30th and December 2nd are matinees at 3 p.m. as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There you go.
So real quick, Mark, before we let you go here, I know that you'll be so kind as to hang around with us for the rest of the hour.
Sure.
I want you to tell me a little bit about what you've learned from working on an original musical. I know you've done a lot of those in the past, and it's always a different experience. What's your favorite and least favorite part of working on an original musical?
I would say my favorite part is that nobody's ever done it before, so there's no preconceived notions. If you're doing a show that's been done 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times, people come to the theater and can possibly be saying, "Oh, well, he did a nice job, but I loved when so and so did."
I saw Davis Gaines in that role, right?
Exactly. I love what he did with this song.
Yeah.
And there's nothing against that. There's room for everybody's interpretations, but it's so nice to be the first person to really sink your teeth into something and not have any preconceived notions and come and bring your own works to it. And then, on top of that, having Bruce and Richard and Kay, et cetera, being able to help you mold that. It's just a truly, truly collaborative experience. And that's what I love the most, is everybody working together to create something that's never been done before. It's really so much fun.
Any downside?
It's hard. In that
we have a hard job.
In that it's never been done before.
That's
therefore,
right.
you've never seen a production of it on stage, or never heard an original cast album. So you don't go into it knowing the lyrics and knowing the lines already, like you've done with some of the other music. When I did Evita, it was in. I walked in the first day. I knew every line. That is not the case here, and it's a lot. It's a beast of a show, and I mean that in the best possible way. It's chock full of really fun stuff. So being able to have to figure all that out from scratch, I wouldn't say it's a downside, but it's definitely challenging.
It's very well said. Very well said.
We have a lovely show to talk about right now in between the interviews here. Shall we do this?
Let's do it. Returning December 3rd at 3 p.m. at the Valley Performing Arts Center after sold-out engagement last season, the whole family will be tempted by Hansel and Gretel, a wickedly delicious musical treat. This musical treat, two-time Grammy-nominated kid indie songwriter Justin Roberts, reimagined the grim fairy tale with a contemporary rock vibe and clever lyrics that will stick in your memory like cotton candy.
The fast-paced hour of family-friendly theater features 14 joyful musical numbers such as Crumb by Crumb and animated backdrops that are as magical as they are colorful. Valley Performing Arts Center's original stage production of Hansel and Gretel is the perfect treat for your family to unwrap this holiday season. And tickets for this, once again, this season, one time only, December 3rd at 3 p.m., musical presentation of Hansel and Gretel. Just visit the Valley Performing Arts Center website at valleyperformingartscenter.org or call the center's ticket office at 818-677-3000 Tuesday through Saturday from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Well, now we should say we love the Valley Performing Arts Center here because it is truly a unique space to work in. And not only that, but it is such a pleasurable place to sit and see a show.
It's a good feel place from the second you drive up and see this gorgeous, gorgeous theater. And it is in the Grand Hall there, by the way. And Valley Performing Arts and Playhouse Square actually present this production by Justin Roberts and Ernie Nolan. And the fairy tale, of course, is by the Grimm Brothers. Animation director is Micah Chambers Goldberg, and it is directed by Los Angeles Ovation Award-winning Michael Matthews, who is a friend of this show. I love his work. Hansel and Gretel is an original production funded by Marla and Carrie Lefton, Julie Strickland, and Tim Wall. Again, ladies and gentlemen, December 3rd, take your children, take the whole family, 3 p.m., Valley Performing Arts Center, Hansel and Gretel.
No doubt about it. A great production. A great production. So now, Michael, we've obviously got a lot coming up here.
Yep.
And we should introduce the gentleman who's sitting to your left.
I will have the pleasure of doing that. Our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, began his career in New York as Tony in the off-Broadway hit Tony and Tina's Wedding, and made his Broadway debut in Neil Simon's Proposals. In Los Angeles, he last appeared in Hillary and Monica, directed by Joel Zwick, who is somewhat of a friend of mine. He's a wacky guy that
great
he is.
Great director.
Yes, he is. Television, I'm sorry, Andrew, go ahead.
Television credits include the amazing NCIS.
Yeah, baby!
Which obviously so many fans are a fan of there. Desperate Housewife, Friends, Glee, CSI New York, Melissa and Joey, Hometown Hero, and reoccurring roles on The Young and the Restless and All My Children. His voice can be heard on Family Guy, Transformers, and numerous video games, including the popular Mafia series.
He is with us in studio today to talk about his newest work, Channeling the King, a play with music at the Hudson Main Stage Theater in Hollywood with limited engagement performances on November 17th and 18th. Let's welcome back Rick Pasqualone.
Thank you.
Yeah, all right. Wait, where's our audience, Michael?
Where'd they go? Well, they're in the bathroom. Go ahead.
Hey, man, so glad to have you here.
They're making me wait for it.
No, I got to tell you, they're out there with signs. They were waiting for you to come out. I saw them poking at you earlier. So. Are things going well?
Things are great.
You got to tell me about the show because, man, this is a honk-a-honk a big show, yeah?
I'll tell you, it's really exciting.
Did you grow up loving Elvis?
I did. It was my mother, ironically, who was the Elvis fan, and she introduced me to the music, and we were talking about it earlier. You know that it's an amazing thing about Elvis music that it can transcend generations. And my kids listen to him now, and they love him. And it was my mom, and she had the old 78s, and she had played the record so much that the little hole in the middle of the record had worn out, and she had meticulously scotch taped it so that it could stay on the record player. And,
wow.
And that was an image that had stuck with me as a kid, and I actually was able to incorporate it into the show. And
really?
It's an image, that people relate to, even though today, you know, our music is all digital and it's great. Yeah. You have a thousand songs on your phone, but back in the day when you had a record and it was, you could touch it, and it was something, you know, special about that, and that was part of what I tried to bring to the show also.
That's
too.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. You have a couple of Rugrats of your own, yeah?
I do.
Now, do you sing Elvis to them?
I sing all the time to them, and they are so not entertained by me. Singularly not.
World-class performer that couldn't care less.
Could not care less.
Well, that's how you know they're your kids, man.
That's
I tell
exactly
you.
Right.
But now Elvis to me, I mean, I remember when my kids were born, I went out and got a guitar book of, you know, just basic Elvis songs, and I would start singing to them, and I can remember my little boy singing back, I don't want a four-leaf clover, a wabbit's foot on its wing, you know, and I would sit there. It was so funny because it was like, you could just tell the lyrics were somewhat campy, but so meaningful still, you know, they loved that. And the performance, once they saw Elvis perform, such heart. And then they got into his blues stuff, which is Reconsider Baby, which is amazing, but it was interesting to see how his music, despite all the stuff that happened later, all the silliness, all the campiness, all the things that went on in his life that were sad and not what he started out as, he loved music from the
really
very
did.
Beginning.
Yeah. And gospel, too. You know, that
yeah.
was... You know,
no doubt. That's what his mother sang to him, right?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I was telling Rick before we went on the air that I have a history with Mr. Presley.
Which hey, there's a shock. Michael knows somebody famous, ladies and gentlemen. Shock of... He knows everybody in this town. Like, there's no... Like, anybody can walk into this town and they're like, oh, hey, Michael, how you doing? I'm just looking in awe. Did you get to meet the king?
I did. Yeah, I've told this story. This
yeah, but I was trying sure. to build anticipation yeah. for our listener.
Okay, in Las Vegas. In Las Vegas, very young. But I'm super young. I'm like 7. And we're all out at the pool, and it's the Sahara Hotel. And I used to... My parents were pretty hooked up in Las Vegas, I must say. So it was always nice to go there. But
like
I used to.
Story,
I got
yeah.
so engaged in the ambiance of that city, and you know, we were treated so well and nicely, and I would go to the white courtesy telephone in the lobby of the casino, and I knew all the operators on the you know, in the operating room. Operating room, telephone room,
a different kind of thing.
And I would have myself paged because I wanted to hear my name come out over
that.
The speakers, you know.
That's
so then, and they say, "Yeah, okay, we'll do it in 5." I said, "Give me 5 minutes to get back to the pool." That's where my
now. How old are you
were.
At this time?
I was probably
35.
7 or 8. Yeah.
35 years old, still doing 7 or 8 years old. I love what
yeah.
a con
and
artist,
so I'd
man.
Get out that's there great. Real casual, you know, by the pool and lay down and on the thing, and then it would be. Michael Sterling, you're wanted on the courtesy, white courtesy telephone. And my parents, what? But this is how I was at 7. And I knew all of the servers who would, you know, serve you at the pool. So one of them's walking by. He says, he kind of says, Michael, come here. He's got a big tray and he's got, you know, food covered up on this this tray, and it was
FYI, kids, if you're in Vegas now and a waiter says, psst, come here,
yeah. Yeah.
don't do it.
Don't
okay, don't do it.
So he said, I'm taking this up to a special guest in the hotel. So he said, come on, I want you to go with me. Just stay behind me about, you know, 2 or 3 feet.
Wow.
Just to, so we go up the elevator. We get off at the very top, which was the penthouse of the Sahara Hotel. And I am, like, nervous now. He says, okay, so you ready? And I said, yeah. He knocks on the door, and the door opens. And there's this gentleman standing there in a white terry cloth robe and jet black hair and very kind of just sleepy-eyed.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend, the waiter, says, Mr. Presley, good morning. This is your breakfast. And Elvis looked beyond him, and he said, who's that?
Wow.
And I said, hi. And I introduced myself, of course. And he said, well, come here. And he said, have you had your breakfast? I said, no, not yet. And he said, come on in.
Unbelievable.
So I sat down and I had breakfast with Elvis Presley.
Do you remember what you had for breakfast that day?
I had scrambled eggs.
Wow.
And I had some fruit, I think, because he was eating some fruit. And then he was eating a lot more than I was. But he was, no, this is when he was really in shape.
Sure.
And he was the sweetest, kindest person.
What a wonderful story.
Yeah, I mean, gentle.
And that waiter who took care of you, man, that
totally.
Guy, that hooked you up big time.
Totally.
That's amazing. What a
and
stand-up
then
guy.
I went
that's
down
really
to the
cool.
pool and told my story. You'll never believe
and
where I've been.
It.
And they didn't believe it. Of course. So, you know.
Michael's lying again.
And later in life, it happened again a second time, but this was when he was in a very different part of his life and on tour, and we were staying in the same hotel. So,
did you tell him the story the second time?
I didn't tell him. I didn't. It wasn't. His mood was quite different on that occasion. So, anyhow, but I appreciate the man and his talent. I thought he was, you know, he was a very good actor, and I thought that he was an amazing singer. And to see him on stage in concert was a pretty amazing thing.
You know, his original audition for Love Me Tender, I think, was his first film. Mm-hmm. He auditioned with a guitar that had no strings, and the people auditioning him couldn't tell that he didn't have strings on the guitar because he was. They watched it on film, and they said, I mean, he played every chord, he kept in time, but it was amazing to watch. So
Rick, in your show, how did you approach that? You play an insurance salesman from New Jersey,
right?
And there is
a natural segue into Elvis in Memphis. You know,
you have the ability to channel
right
Elvis Presley,
right?
So, what was your approach to that? I watched you're wearing the same costumes that he wore, and they're very recognizable. So, did you study him?
I did. Yeah. Well, first, you know, in developing the show, it was always in mind to have it be a two-character play. You know, this was not intended to be an Elvis tribute show. This was a guy, like you said, who can channel Elvis, and he's just a guy, just an insurance salesman, and but he has this connection to Elvis. And so, to prepare to play the role, of course, you know, I watched hours of footage and listened to his voice, and from the early years to the later, because he changed, you know, quite a bit. And very humble, always very humble, very funny. Mm-hmm. You know, you listen to some of the interviews, and he was really funny.
Yeah, he was.
And never took himself too seriously. Always kind of had a can you really believe this is happening?
I know, right?
You know, about him. And that's what I found was so charming about him. And he kept that up. Even in the later years, you know, he would break his concerts to talk to the audience. And that's part of our show, too. We do it as interactive. So I go out into the crowd and I talk to them. And, you know, whatever they, you know, sometimes stuff happens. They throw stuff back at me. And I hand out scarves, you know, and they get a kick out of it because it's, you know, it's an intimate experience with, you know, a side of him that probably, you know, and we took some educated guesses as about how would he be if he was back on stage, you know, 40 years after his death. What would it be like?
Yeah.
You know, what would he be experiencing? And so we tried to incorporate all that.
So it is an immersive experience for them?
It is, yeah. I mean, the audience is definitely part of the show. As from the opening, we treat it as if, you know, you were going to like an airport Ramada to, you know, buy some insurance. It's, you know, interactive, and even with Jesse, the character, he talks to the audience, and then Elvis comes out, and it's the same thing. And so it's special for the crowd, too, because they get to really feel.
Do they, when you're in the Elvis mode, do they shout out that they want you to sing a particular song, or is
when we did the show in New York, I wasn't really sure what to expect,
right?
You know, but as you said, we actually have this amazing costume that was designed based on the original design of Bill Bello, who was Elvis's costume designer, and they're still making them this day, PK costumes, and we were able to get one that he wore, a copy of the one that he wore in Madison Square Garden.
Oh, cool.
And it's fabulous.
That's
it's
a great set. White one?
Glasses, and white, it's beautiful. And coming out into the crowd, and I was singing to this lady in the crowd, and I handed her my scarf, and she literally started hopping up and down on her seat.
Wow.
I'm so excited to tell this. And I said, oh, he's really fine.
Yeah, have her come back again and again.
I was looking over my shoulder. I'm like, is he really here? What's happening?
That's so interesting. And this musical, obviously, it's billed as a play with music. Is that how you... Now, what kind of songs are they going to hear when they go to see this?
There's quite a few. We tried, as you were talking about earlier, about how the music is woven into the show, we did try to, you know, obviously people want to hear, they want to hear Hound Dog and Teddy Bear, but we tried to incorporate it as part of the story so that it reflected what we were talking about at the moment, to reflect the mood of the moment that we were in. You know, he was talking about Priscilla, or talking about his daughter, or talking about, you know, so that it does weave into the story. And so, you'll hear a number of his biggest hits, and maybe some that you're not as familiar with. A song like Memories, which is a beautiful song.
Yeah,
And I do that acoustic. And
So, again,
it brings an intimacy to it that probably most people didn't get to experience because, you know, at this point, not too many people are that have seen him live are still
there. That's right. Has anybody connected to Elvis come to see it? Has Lisa Marie come to see it?
No, not yet.
Well, we have her here today.
Well, fantastic. Yeah.
So it's interesting because this was done just off of your own story, right? You thought this story up with...
I did not create the original story. Our executive producer, Robert Wattman, it was his idea.
And you built it together with your creative team?
Robert had the idea. He had hired this great writer, Greg D'Alessandro, who wrote the original draft and kind of formatted it the way it is now with the insurance seminar as being the vehicle to drive the show. And then little by little, as we collaborated, Denise Fennell, the other producer, we all got together and had input into what was happening. And it was very collaborative. And, you know, we were constantly pushing the envelope and the technology now that we were able to access. A lot of the show, it's all projections.
Wow. I was going to say.
Once we realized what was available to us technology-wise, it opened up such a world of possibilities to go back and forth in time so that you can see Elvis in Madison Square Garden, and then you also see him in, you know, back home in Memphis and Graceland, you know, so you can, the audience gets transported in time and place. And
have you ever been to Graceland?
I have.
Yeah, so have I.
I paid
you
my
too?
Tribute.
You
know?
Yeah. That's great. Did you go to?
Second most visited place in America.
Much. Is it really?
After
I didn't.
The White House.
Wow.
That's true.
Wow.
Another little factoid there from the show. But that's another thing. So because we do try to, you know, incorporate some, you know, not everybody knows his story.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And it's pretty fascinating.
Well, the show is called Channeling the King, and One Man, Two Souls, One Truth is the tagline, which I love very much. It's a very limited engagement. Two nights only. Is that correct? So this is Friday, November 17th, Saturday, November 18th. And is that the end of the show, or are you going to tour on?
The idea was always to tour it.
Okay.
It's like I said, with the projections, and it's kind of a pack-and-play kind of show. And
cool.
We thought this is something that could tour the country easily and that people could relate to around the country because Elvis is, you know, beloved everywhere.
Yeah.
I hope you guys can come see it.
I would love to. Yeah.
This is such a great topic, too, because there's so many people who are absolutely addicted to Elvis. Again, the show is called Channeling the King, so you can look that up, but it's at a great theater as well. So,
at the Hudson Main Station.
Which we love.
Yes,
such a great space.
Tickets and information are available at channelingtheking.com.
Mm-hmm.
Simple as that. And Friday, November 17th, 8 p.m., I presume?
8 p.m.
And Saturday, November 18th, 8 p.m.
And tickets are as low as $35, I believe, which is a great price for a beautiful theater and a beautiful show. You can also go to plays411.
Yes, you can.
/the king.
That's right.
And that's a great way to do that, too.
And, of course, additional information is available at the show's website, channelingtheking.com.
Great place to maybe book this for your theater throughout the country.
Absolutely.
Too. So I've got a friend who, at the end of her high school career, she was very Catholic, and she was coming up to her final Lent in high school, and her priest said to her, "What's the one thing that you've never given up for Lent, the hardest thing for you to give up? I want you to do that before you begin the rest of your life." And she thought about it, and she looked up, and she said, "Elvis." She said, "I listen to Elvis every day when I wake up." She said, "I talk about him." And she wasn't crazy. She was just a girl who loved his music and was so touched by what he did, and she knew everything about him. And she said it was the hardest Lent, but the most rewarding experience when she got the King back. So it was interesting because I think there are people who have made him such a part of their life. I hope those people show up to see the show because it looks fantastic. And you're obviously, and we didn't get a chance to talk much about your other career, from the clips I saw on YouTube, and obviously people can Google you and find out more, what a performer you are. So I'm looking very forward to seeing this and seeing you in action.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us here today. Let's give a big hand to both of our guests.
Yeah.
But gentlemen, you sit here and you look so cocky at the end of the show like you made it through. No, no, no. It is time, my friends.
And now, embarrassing moments.
Oh! You see, the audience is excited today. They're very into it. Our embarrassing moments segment is a chance for young performers to realize that even established stars have had things happen to them that almost made them quit the business, but they continued on and great things happened. Do you guys have a story, something maybe that happened that was so terrifying and so awful in the moment, but you got through it and proved the show must go on?
Would you like to go first?
Oh,
hand it off to the king there,
sure,
brother.
Sure, why not? Yeah. Well, I don't know that it made me quit the business, but I have to say, as a cautionary tale, it was my first show in New York when I was doing Tony and Tina's wedding, and I was a young man, and you know, in New York City, and you know, you go out after a show, and you know, you have a couple. It was my birthday on a Friday night. And,
very nice.
Right before I left the theater that night, the stage manager looked at me and said, we expect you to see you for the matinee tomorrow. And I said, yeah, no problem whatsoever. Well, I overdid it and Came in the next day, I made the matinee, but I have to say that particular show, the groom was very, very sick. Yeah, I was wearing out a
path to the bathroom, man,
and it was the audience that saw that show that night, like, boy, he was convincing.
That's
he was
a method actor right there.
Yeah, he was a method actor. He was throwing up on the street. How about that?
Well, we're glad you survived, and please don't do that for the two nights of this show. You get even sick for one of those, it changes it drastically.
It does, yeah.
No birthdays coming up.
First row, better watch out.
Mark, what you got for us? Oh, have you told them all already? You've been on the show so many times.
I would love to say that I used them all up, but I haven't even scratched the surface, I'm sure. But the one that I could think of today, I was working in Naples, Florida, the now defunct Naples Dinner Theater. I came in to do Anything Goes. I got there. They were rehearsing a 60s review that they wrote for this one specific performer. So the show was built around him. And they were working so hard. It's like 50 songs and all kinds of. They wrote a book. They finally got it open on opening night. The guy that they wrote it for, the star of the show, jumps off a box like he's supposed to and breaks his leg.
Oh, no.
Immediately. And they said, can you learn the show in 3 days? I went, I'll sure give it a shot.
Wow.
And so I busted my butt. A lot of friends really helping me out. I learned the show in 3 days. I got there. The first night I went on, I'm plugging through. I'm feeling great. It was a bunch of really well-known stuff, but then some other more obscure stuff that I had to work on. And I'm getting through the show, and I'm feeling so good. I finally get to the end, and we're doing People Gotta Be Free, The Rascals, the whole deal.
Of course.
Which then supposedly led into Put a Little Love in Your Heart. So I'm finishing up, and I launch into Put a Little Love in Your Heart, and I'm going, and all of a sudden I realize there's no music behind me, and my fellow performers are not singing, and I'm letting it rip. I'm going, what the hell is wrong with everybody? And the show ends. Finally, everybody comes back in and does their thing. We end the show. I come backstage. I'm feeling on top of the world.
I
did the show 3 days, the whole deal. I ran off, and I looked at everybody. I said, where'd you guys go? What happened? And they said, You remember there was a song or two in between there and a dance break and a dip. I skipped like three songs and a dance break. I just went straight.
You abridged. The show. You abridged the show. Well done.
That is a nice way of putting it. Abridged. Yes.
Send them a bill and say, look, I cut 2 hours off the show for you, there, guys.
They were just having their appetizers.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I was going to say.
Oh,
so that
Mark.
Was, yeah.
How have you not told that story before? That's great.
I told you there's many of them.
So we got to have Mark back on again.
Stay
obviously
focused
Rick
on your
too.
Show, guys. Yeah. Really, really stay focused on what you're supposed to be doing.
We've told people about some great theater here in Los Angeles, haven't we, Michael?
Yeah.
Once again, Hansel and Gretel is playing at the Beautiful Valley Performing Arts Center. That's coming up December 3rd. You don't want to miss that. That's a great chance to see a really wonderful show. Only one night this
and
season.
And just go to valleyperformingartscenter.org for tickets or call the ticket office at 818-677-3000, Tuesday through Saturday, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m.
And, of course, Channeling the King, the show we talked with Rick about at length here today. You can go to www.channelingtheking.com, but don't miss this. This is two nights only, November 17th and 18th. That's a Friday and Saturday coming up here at the Hudson Stage.
And tickets are very, very affordable for that show, and we appreciate that here in Los Angeles, but you're going to see a great talent doing a wonderfully interesting show about an insurance salesman who has the ability to channel the king. So
that's right. And of course, we've told you about Levi the Musical, which is the show that the one and only Mark Ginsburg is starring in, about Levi Strauss, an interesting man, and it's in a world premiere by the Sherman Brothers, which how often do you get to see something like that? A very cool thing coming up here, and that's on November 18th, running all the way through December 2nd, but it is a limited engagement.
Well, it actually opens on November 16th.
You're right. Thank you, Michael. Yeah.
Which is the preview performance, and officially for the press on the 17th, and then through December 2nd.
Mm-hmm. So don't miss the chance to see these great shows. So much going on here in Los Angeles, yeah?
Gentlemen,
thank you
being with us. We appreciate it more than you know.
That's
and
right.
I always appreciate you sitting across from you, sir.
Great to see you, Michael. And once again, we want to remind everybody to get out, see some live theater, go see a play, take your kids out to see something fun, and support the arts here in Southern California. Michael, where will I see you again next week?
On the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.